I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, we all say parental guidance needed for this show. You're listening to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, the UK Bills podcast. Robin, Mark, myself, Matt, here. And I think Mark's probably going to be the most foul-mouthed of us all. Because, United just lost, didn't they?
Yeah, sports shit.
But let's see how we can dissect this Bengals game. I mean, other than it's shit, what was everyone's thoughts on it? Tumbleweed rolling.
I didn't think the Bengals were actually that good. So if you want my positive statement, if we'd actually played even a couple of notches better, I think we would have won. I don't think they're that. They played about as well as they had to. They're all the efficient and all the stuff. That's the only thing I'm hanging on to at the moment. I can't muster too much enthusiasm right about now for where the Bills are.
Do I need to ask you, Mark?
Well, I mean, I think Robin's right that the Bengals didn't have to play that well. And still at no point did I feel like we were going to win this game.
No.
We scored in our, obviously, first possession. And then we don't score again until a few minutes left in the game. And we never looked like scoring, really. And the scoreline flatters us, I think, the fact that we only lost by what we lost. And I just feel like it's so flat and predictable and it's really, really bad right now.
So it brings you to think. I mean, you see how we, I wouldn't say dismantled the Bucks, but the way we handled the Bucks on offense and obviously the first three games of the season, you'd kind of think that they would look to go back into that form. They seem to have found the identity as such and how they've got the majority of their good plays being in no huddle. And obviously the players calling the plays itself and having the option routes, the routes. And why did it go from the fact that we were up tempo or we actually were quite efficient in the first drive, and then after that we put up what 3 points until even that till we got the last or two.
Yeah, before the final or penultimate drive.
Yeah.
But I think Mark can sum this up now, is it, with one phrase.
Well, it's our old favourite, fuck Ken Dorsey. What I don't understand is, as you alluded to there, the offence last weekend against the Bucks looked vaguely competent. They looked like they knew what they were doing. It was a bit more bat-like to the Bills' offence that's made us successful over the last 3 or 4 years. And yet, in this game, we went totally away from that again. Back to the offense that we'd been against the Giants. Back to the offense that we've been previously, where we've really struggled in the last couple of games. And when asked about it, the players were like, "Why didn't you go up tempo? Why weren't you playing no huddle?" And the only response was, "That wasn't the game plan." You can almost see that they don't agree with the game plan. And I think regardless of what happens for the rest of the season this way, Ken Dorsey will not be our offensive coordinator next season. And if he is, it basically borders on negligence by senior management and they should be gone. But Ken Dorsey is not, he's someone who can probably do a good job at designing a play. What he can't do is get a feel for the game and manage the play calling in a game based on the situation that he finds himself in. He has a game plan. If it's not working, he sticks to it. He doesn't go away from it, and it doesn't work. And he is just not up to the job.
I put it to you. Obviously, I think I said this to you, Mark, a couple of shows back. Or was it both of you? Obviously, would McDermott get involved in there, and does he have a little bit of a say in the offensive game plan? Just reading, obviously, what he said in his presser, he actually said they got away from up-tempo offense because they want other styles in offense. They want complementary offense. And Ken Dorsey then says why they didn't go up-tempo till late, saying we're in some backed-up situations, so we couldn't get into the rhythm. The big thing for us is to get that into that groove and not become one-dimensional predictable. But surely Dorsey is contradicting himself by saying not becoming predictable, the fact that he's becoming predictable.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, you're reading sort of tea leaves a little bit in the presser, aren't you? Because they're never going to admit it. It's a sort of performative thing, isn't it? It's all about, you know, things to clean up, got to do a better job. nothing was good enough, or if they win, it's just one game, everyone do their 1/11th kind of thing. It's, you can't read too much into pressers. It just almost seems like they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I know that's an obvious point, but it's like we're 20 something games into the sort of Dorsey regime. We're 25, is it? 26, yeah. Also, he did 17 games last year, plus the, well, you know, we're 20 plus games. He's not a newbie anymore. And I think, to sort of echo Mark's point, he can kind of establish a kind of personnel grouping, and he can establish a certain way of playing, but then he can't do anything on top of that. There's that one play that he can do that'll work, but if it doesn't work, he kind of doesn't have any other answer. And the only other answer is, well, Josh just has to come up with a bit of magic for us. And that's fine, so long as Josh Allen is playing magical. But the idea of having a play calling and a play in an offensive scheme is that you don't have to have people turning miracles in order to get a play. You should be able to come up with something that'll just get you a nice, easy 4 or 5 yards.
And that's what Joe Burrow is doing. He's not Hero Joe. He's not doing like 50, 60-yard bombs down the field. He's taking the open receiver when it's there.
Yeah.
And that's, we're just not scheming people open. And at the minute when they are open, Josh Allen isn't even throwing them the ball.
That's what I was going to bring up. I mean, me and Rob were going to have a little discussion about just beforehand. The fact that I read a cover one, or not read, watched a cover one article about, does Ken Dorsey's system fit Josh Allen? And obviously, seeing a few plays on there, it seems like in that game, his main two reads were Diggs and Kincaid. But you can see there's so many on a few of the plays that he is only just looking at one read. He's not going through all progressions. And that's probably what has cost us first downs, especially for the interception. And all that, because on the interception, obviously, he pretty much stared down, who was it, Davis, the whole time. But
it was a bad throw, and he threw it short as well. It was awful. And on that play, if you notice, he has got Gabe Davis completely free, running across the middle of the field. Doesn't look at him once.
No, there's another throw. Was the one he threw to. It was Diggs.
Sorry, Diggs was free, totally free.
And they had Cook and Kincaid free as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
On that.
Just not seeing them.
And then on another one where he actually took the deep shot to Harty, I'm looking at the play now. I'm just trying to see who it was. I think it was Kincaid or Diggs. Yeah, he got Diggs on the crossing route. Yep. Free.
Hmm.
Obviously, if we
simple passes that move the chains.
And then The third one, it was is when he scrambled out of the pocket. He had Latavius Murray open to get at least close to the first down. I'm still watching it now. Yeah, he's in so much space. He starts running, directing, and then he just runs out of bounds for a one-yard gain. So are we, as much as we can obviously say it is Ken Dorsey and the fact that he's not scheming up, getting these players available, when he's not scheming up good plays that really keep this defense guessing, is it also a little bit of Josh Allen and the fact that what he's gone from and what he wanted to be this season, has that affected his play altogether? Because only focusing on two reads and then almost going against what's available has sort of cost us plays, cost us interceptions, cost us bad field positions and all that. Is Josh Allen more to blame for that, or is it still the scheming and the players trying to get open?
He is, in the first instance, you're right. It is kind of Josh Allen's fault that he should be seeing the guys that are doing that. And a guy being paid $40 million a year, or thereabouts, ought to be doing a better job of it. I suppose the flip of that then comes in, well, ultimately, you're not going to fire Josh Allen and you're not going to fire Sean McDermott. So somebody ultimately is going to be held responsible. And if you're the offensive coordinator, it's kind of your job to make sure that that person does their job, isn't
correct.
It? It's like, you can fire the person who's not doing the job right, but if you're a manager of some kind, it's kind of your job to make sure the people reporting to you do theirs.
100%. And I had this beef with quite a lot of Bills Mafia on Twitter after the Patriots game. Where I made, like, one of the comments I made was after the Bills put on Twitter saying something like, the press conference is starting. And I was like, unless they say that we are relieving Ken Dorsey of his duties, then we don't want to hear it. And I had quite a few Bills fans coming at me saying, well, Ken Dorsey can't make Josh Allen throw interceptions and he doesn't make. And I was like, well, Ken Dorsey is the leader of the offense. He is the one who is designed and employed to make sure that Josh Allen is ready to go. And if he's making loads of mistakes, it's on him to make sure that they get eradicated from his game. And so far, he's proven to be absolutely unable to do that. Now, whether that is the quarterback's coach, Brady, or whether it's somebody else, I don't know. But ultimately, the axe has to fall somewhere, and it can't be anywhere else. I don't know whether this is the right place to do it, but I don't necessarily agree that they're not going to sack Sean McDermott. I think that in terms of hot seats, his bum has never been more warm than it is currently in his time in Buffalo. And if we don't make the playoffs, he is absolutely, I think, on the hot seat and in danger of getting the bullet. With that roster that we've got, with the way that it is aging and with some of the contracts that there are at the minute, I think if it is a monumental failure if they do not make the playoffs this year, and they're in real danger of that now.
I think they will make the playoffs. So I think it's almost a moot point because I don't think they're quite as bad. I think the things that they can turn around, I think things can get better. You know, the Broncos go 70 points down to the Dolphins and then they beat the Chiefs by 2 scores, you know, within the space of about five or six games. I think things can turn around, but I agree with you. I think McDermott's in a lot of trouble if we don't make the playoffs. I can't imagine that being... imagine that happening. And of course,
why not?
Because it does feel like he's on his ass, he's going to take it out on Dorsey. So that kind of almost resolves Dorsey will throw Dorsey. Coaches don't fire themselves, he'll find a person who he can get.
We've lost three of our last five games. Realistically, the Giants win, we won, like, we got away with it because of a really, really dodgy non-PI call that was given on the last play of the game. if Chris Godwin is vaguely awake on that Hail Mary at the end of the Buccaneers game, like he even glances up at all, John, the Hail Mary, we're 3-6 at the moment.
Yes, you could also take back the Patriots one as well. We were ahead with 2 minutes to go. All we had to do was just make any kind of stop against Mac Jones. That's one back for us. The Jets.
But that's not a dodge. That's not a dodgy penalty that wasn't given. That's poor play.
We lost that because we were bad. Only it's four quarters of football, though, isn't it? You can always laser in on one on a handful
I think,
of play.
I guess the point I was trying to make is we've lost to the Jaguars where we were terrible, the Patriots where we were unbelievably terrible. We scraped home against the Giants where we were terrible. We beat the Buccaneers where we weren't bad, but somehow let them hang around. And now we've lost a game that was a really nothing performance against the Bengals. Coming up, we've got a Jets team that are always desperate to beat us and look horrendous on offense, same as us.
Very good on defense.
Defensively incredible. The Eagles, the Chiefs, the Cowboys, the Chargers, and the Dolphins on the final week. The second half of our schedule is much harder than this half we've just gone through. And we've thrown away three games on paper. You can't tell me that we're nailed in for the playoffs. We're not in it at the moment.
I'm not saying we're nailed in for the playoffs. I'm still saying I think we still have a better than evens chance of making the playoffs. I guess is what I'm saying. I don't like schedules on paper. Let's see what happens when we actually play them. I'm not convinced by almost any other team that's in the NFL, particularly this season. I'm not even convinced by the Chiefs. I'm not convinced by the Cowboys. I think they're good on their day, but I think that they're... I think all of them are
better than us at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yes, we've got to get better. Oh God, I'm sounding like a fucking press conference now, but yes, but I'm saying is I think
that's a new segment. That's a new segment. After every game, we'll come on here. We'll do a UK Bills press conference.
Yeah. Well, we just gotta get
can
better.
Can we sack Kendall?
We could sack him.
We can pass a vote. Yeah, we can take a vote, Ken. Sorry.
Generally, I think the only team that's above us in the wild card race at the moment that is not a much, much better team than we are is Pittsburgh. And everybody else, I think, I don't consider us one of the best four or five teams in the AFC at the moment, let alone the NFL. And it might click. I keep watching thinking, oh, this will be the game that it clicks, but it just doesn't. And I'm at loss as to work out why.
It begs the question, obviously, what you said just a little bit while ago, obviously, about it. You look, and I pose this question to you two both on our WhatsApp chat, the fact that do you look, and obviously with McDermott not being on the hot seat right now, if obviously he misses the playoff this year, will he be on the hot seat knowing that next year, or going into 2024, Micah Hyde is a free agent, Daquan Jones is a free agent, Leonard Floyd's a free agent, Dane Jackson's a free agent, then 2025, you've got Jordan Poyer. You've got, hold on, I'm going to get up here. You've got Deion Dawkins. You've got Mitch Moore. You've got Teron Johnson. You've even got Rasul Douglas.
Yeah.
Not to mention Dawson Knox and Von Miller have huge money for next year as well, don't they?
We are primed for a teardown. This is a team that's ready to have a lot of its bits stripped away. You know, the roster is old. There's a lot of, as you said, Robin, there's a lot of contracts that are not looking good going forward. Trey White, Dawson Knox
is not anywhere
performing to his contract level. Von Miller, we're paying a ridiculous 20 million a year or whatever it is to play 15 snaps and not trouble the quarterback in any way at all. I know that he's coming back from injury, but that's what's he doing at the moment?
That's why I posed that question. Do you then, after this season, knowing that you've got that coming up, do you actually try and get younger? Or do you try and use some of these veterans for next year as a as Trey Bate to get more picks to try and get a bit younger and a bit more depth in there. Almost, I wouldn't say go a total bust everything, jack everything in, actually lose every single game and all that, but not, I wouldn't say put in as much effort as they can to try and win, but if they lose by the odd score playing well, knowing that we've got these injuries on defense, would you be happy with that type and actually us actually trying to rebuild that way rather than actually, or going full in LA Rams, getting these players in on 1 year deals, throwing second round, first round picks to get these players in to try and strengthen for that one Super Bowl run, then spend 2 or 3 years in a rebuild mode, trying to catch up with all the salary cap implications and obviously the lack of lack of picks.
Oh, it's a fairly poor choice, whichever way you look at it, isn't it?
Because I think for me, if they were going to go down the Rams route, they would have done it this year.
With the injuries that they had.
It was, you know, if they were going to do it, they probably thought they had a roster that was capable. There were people available, probably for trade, if the right deal was there, like a Devontae Adams, like a DeAndre Hopkins. Those guys were available, and we didn't go for them. There were running backs available, like Derrick Henry, that we didn't go for. Christian McCaffrey, we didn't go for. When the injuries happened on defense, we didn't, like, we went for a journeyman veteran, decent enough, but still a veteran journeyman cornerback to plug a gap. We didn't make a splash. It doesn't strike me that that is the Bean and McDermott way to do it, the way that the Rams have done it. They want to build through the draft, but it's a huge amount of work. And it's, you know, the amount of people that you've got coming up that need paying. Gabe's contract is up. Gabe Davis can't get free at all. He's like, we can't rely on him as a wide receiver too. Rousseau and Daquan Jones need paying. Floyd and Epenesa are going to both be up this season as well. Morse might retire at any particular day. Poyer and Hyde, they're near the end. Even Diggs is 30 in if not today, like in the next couple of days, and is on massive money. If we have another failed season, is Diggs going to have his standard off-season strop and think, oh, I'm not hanging around if I can't win a Super Bowl, and clear off to go and play with his brother in Dallas? It wouldn't surprise me.
We've talked about, we can talk all day about the negatives and all that. Obviously,
real council of despair, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, apart from there was a couple of bright spots from that game. I mean, obviously, bar the fumble, which kind of was a decent.
It was a great play. Pratt, wasn't it, on the day with the punch?
Yeah, the punch.
He did punch that well.
But you've got Kincaid who actually again didn't barely drop anything. Obviously, the fumble was a drop as such.
Yeah. Apart from that, Mr. Duncan, how was the play? apart from the fumble,
The Shakir actually looks good now. He's pretty much had no drops in two or three games. And it's an interesting stat I've actually picked up in that game against the Bengals. If you were to say out of Davis, Diggs, Sherfield, Shakir, Kincaid, who would have the biggest average separation in yards?
Oh, separate! Don't have that in front of me. I actually don't have a stat this week.
With the league average is 2.94 yards, out of those five, who would you think would be the highest on that? On separation,
I'll say Shakir.
Mark, take yourself off mute, Mark.
Kincaid.
Mark's got it.
Is it Kincaid?
Kincaid, 4.23 yards. 4.23 yards. Second was Shakir with 3.82 yards.
Second coming
third
after.
Was Third was Diggs with 2.56 yards.
Wow.
Sherfield was fourth with 2.2 yards. Gabe Davis, 1 yard.
Yeah.
The league average,
that doesn't
separation sound, is that nearly 3 yards. Right. In that game, Gabe Davis pretty much, his average separation was 1 yard.
Yeah. He's always covered.
Yeah.
But as I say, the positives out there is that you've now got Kincaid and Shakir that are starting to become a bit more of I wouldn't say safety net as well. It's starting to build up more rapport with Josh Allen. And that's good to see. And I mean, even catch percentage, there's another stat that Sal Capaccio put up. Catch percentage, Khalil Shakir is second in the whole NFL with a catch percentage of 94.7%. Who's above him, do you think?
Don't know.
Not just Bills, like NFL.
General NFL.
He
probably never get it.
Oh, okay.
But I'll see your guesses anyway.
Go on, tell us.
Rashard White.
I would have been guessing a long time.
97.1%. Third in that list, Dalton Kincaid, 88.9% catch percentage. Then, what was it? There's one, what, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. In 11th, James Cook. With 84.6%. And in between those guys, you've got all running backs. You've got Kamara, McCaffrey, Gibson, Swift, Pacheco, Henry, Gibbs. After James Cook, you've got Perrine, Gerald Everett, Evan Ingram, Tony Pollard, Jalen Warren, Chuba Hubbard, Cole Kmet, Wandale Robinson, Adam Thielen, Curtis Samuel, Jonas Smith, and Braxton Berrios. We've got, as much as we hate, obviously saying we got Davis on there, we've got the bright spots now of the youngsters actually starting to come through. And hopefully, if we get a competent OC or teams that we go into a no-huddle offense, allowing the players to make the moves, we've got a good, young, exciting core of catchers, obviously James Cook being a runner as well, that can actually really help this offense and stretch this offense out.
My big worry is sometimes when you have like a struggling team and they're kind of playing for the coach, a bit like the Lions were in the last sort of year or two kind of thing. Like they didn't have like that as many good players, but they were kind of playing for the coach. They were playing for the team. So they sort of scrapped their way to a few victories. And, you know, look at the Lions now. They're you know, getting a few better players in and got a shot at the NFC North. What worries me is that I worry about like the locker room kind of, are they going to come together? They've probably still got a lot of respect for McDermott. They've probably still got a lot of, just professional pride to play for. But whatever it is that needs fixing, whatever it is they need to do, they've got to figure it out over the next two home games. They should win them. They should at home. They've not actually lost a game in Buffalo. The only home game they lost was the Tottenham game, the fucking expensive, overpriced premium seat bullshit game, as I will forever refer to it as.
You enjoyed that one. You enjoyed that experience.
£50 for that shit. Jesus, fucking Spurs fans. Where was I?
Winning
I just games. Think. Maybe win your home games, win two home games. I mean, it's more in hope than expectation, but maybe the players will find it, even if the OC can't.
Yeah, and to be honest, the one thing is that Josh Allen pretty much had his hand picked Ken Dorsey as his replacement. So you kind of would have thought
he's made him look an arse, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But you could, like, maybe this was the first press conference where Josh seemed genuinely pissed off with the game plan that had been given to him.
Yes.
He didn't back him. He didn't say, you know, all the nice things about Ken Dorsey. That wasn't the game plan. It was kind of throwing him under the bus without throwing him under the bus. He didn't look happy at all with it.
Yeah. And that's kind of made me thinking that let's say any more of these type of games in the next few weeks, even up to the bye week, I have a feeling that Josh may have a big say in actually whether Dorsey goes or not. I think
I think you're absolutely right. I
if
think
we still have bad performances up to the bye week,
you've lost your job.
Yeah. Even if we have one or two games in the next stretch up to the bye week where we play good football, but there's still question marks on the offensive style, the identity on that. I could see Alan going up to McDermott saying, no, cut him, get rid of him. Get rid of him, have a search for the end till the end of the season, have
Joe Brady and Mike Shula, get them up there, get them to run it. Yeah, I don't think, I mean, they're not the answer, but yeah.
No, they're the stopgap for the remaining however many games there will be left. And then, you know, there's going to be some head coaches that are going to be fired at the end of the year. There's going to be some up-and-coming OCs. I mean, I wouldn't mind them going for a bit of Byron Leftwich. I mean, he had Brady for a couple of years, but he's still an offensive-minded player, and he actually plays a bit more offensively and has a bit more creativity. Obviously, Bieniemy probably won't leave.
Bieniemy's going to be a head coach next season at Washington, so there's no way that he's going anywhere, I don't think.
There's not, apart from, I guess, Kellen Moore, the Cowboys. I can't at the moment really see anyone that can really elevate Josh's game right now, but obviously what happened at the end of the season is another question. We obviously come to that when it actually happens. But I think the one other thing we need to talk about, and I think this is going to be a very much a sweary segment, is the god-awful referees.
Oh, you don't want to say that that's the week.
It's definitely not the reason. The Bills pretty much beat themselves.
As a fan of the game, and if I was just watching that as a neutral, I would still be absolutely hopping mad. The trip, the intentional grounding and the face mask on Gabe Davis are so unbelievably egregious. And I'm not really someone who goes at refs because I know how hard a job it must be. But it's you've got to have some sort of mechanism by which you can review a no flag or a non-call. They've got to like figure something out where they can, with all the technology, with all the things, to not even have such a blatant trip in front of them. I mean, I remember Josh Allen got flagged for a trip I can't remember if it was this season or the end of last season that wasn't. And yet you've got such a blatant one in front of him. I mean, the intentional grounding is ridiculous. I mean,
probably the worst decision I've ever seen.
Yes, because the amount of times where you really have a very good argument for an intentional grounding and they almost never throw it unless it's so bad. And then you literally have one there that was for nothing. And you don't want it. That's not the reason why we lost, but just for the general quality of the game, it's really bad.
Yeah, I just think it's just you just lost for words sometimes on this sort of stuff where you actually go we just have these plays that just make you want to rip your hair out, and you kind of think you have that in your mindset thinking, do these referees actually just do it for fun? Are they, is someone in their pocket or something like that?
I don't think so, because the thing I remember reading, I can't remember where it was, it might have been ESPN, and they were talking about basically that the referees are kind of in the shop window to be refereeing the Super Bowl. And there's a sort of saying about when they make a bad call, the referees will sort of look at each other and go, there goes the Super Bowl. Kind of, if they make a bad one, then the NFL remember them for it. So I've never been one of those people who think that they're in the pocket of some other team. I think it is possibly true that they unconsciously allow bigger teams away with decisions. There was always the thing about Man United under Ferguson. There's always the thing about the Patriots getting away with stuff. There was the Chiefs are well known to hold on virtually every play, and they just dare the refs to throw the flag. I think there's things like that, but the idea that you would make such an obviously bad call because you're trying to swing a game one way or the other, I just think is untrue. Oh, we didn't even mention the roughing the passer either.
No.
Where he just almost runs into him and does everything he could.
Actually cushioned the guy in the end.
Yes, yeah, he fell on him. He made
Barry. Yeah, he fell on me. And like, oh, and that's rough. But mind you, I mean, that's certainly not exclusive to us. Roughing the passer this year in the NFL is an absolute joke. Some of the decisions that are made there, you can't even tackle the quarterback anymore without it being roughing. Now it's bullshit.
Yeah. It is ridiculous.
So before we preview Broncos, obviously, me and Rob obviously chose our players to watch. Obviously, I went on offense. I went Spencer Brown, who
he's been playing pretty well.
He played well. I mean, he gave up a sack in that game, and he gave up two hurries.
Yeah.
But he's still graded out on PFF as 65.2, which is one of his highest. It's his fourth highest, fifth highest or something this season. It's still showing that he is starting to find his feet a lot more, and maybe that is the Cromer effect.
Could be, yeah. He had a bit of help earlier on, but he sort of clawed his way up to kind of adequate, hasn't he?
It's only taken him 3 years.
Yeah.
But well, it's usually three, isn't it? Rookies usually get 3 years.
Yeah.
But obviously last year he was injured a fair bit, and maybe an off season now fully healthy under Cromer.
Another good year. Yeah.
It's actually good.
I'll give him that he has been adequate, which is far better than I thought he would be.
Yeah. I mean, given up two sacks all season. Three hits, given 14 hurries, and quarterback pressures, he's given up 19. He's given away four penalties, but it's a start. I mean, it's a good way for him to get in there, and it's showing that him and Torrance probably have got a really good partnership going, get a bit more understanding going. Obviously, he'll get a bit of help, a bit more with the tight ends. Coming in, and especially on run plays when they bring David Edwards in on there, but it's showing that there is growth in there, and the fact that apart from obviously when the games were won, the Bills had pretty much the whole 9 weeks trotted out the same five starting offensive linemen every single game this season.
They can't blame Josh Allen hasn't had time. Hasn't had a settled line.
So that's the thing, isn't it? When you actually pick it apart, the line has been consistent and decent. No injuries. Josh Allen is there. We've got James Cook, a running back, and a running back committee that is actually serviceable. Stephon Diggs is still there. Dalton Kincaid has looked good and come on and actually last two or three weeks started to look really good. And yet the offense looks awful.
Mm. Yeah. And Shakir's turned out to be a good find.
He's turned out to be a good find. I thought looked pretty decent last year when he got the chance. And Gabe Davis is a massive disappointment, but it's like we say that like as he's the man that scored like a touchdown in what five or six games in a row.
And
yet the offense still can't get out of its own way. All the parts are there and functioning well, but they're just not performing.
And even. When we say this, I'm looking up one more stat on there. Offensive series results, the amount of plays or drives that the Bills had in the whole season, including if it's ended with a field goal at the end of the half or kneel downs excluded, 77% of all Bills offensive series either went for a touchdown or a first down. And yet we're still struggling on these plays, on this offense. But as you say, got an offensive line, which has actually been solid and been there the whole time. And I say this is going, this probably be us going back on to what we were talking about, scheme and all that. So I just thought I'd put that in before I talk about my defensive player to watch, which was Ed Oliver.
Oh yeah, I didn't remember seeing much of him during the game.
He had what, seven total pressures. He had two tackles and seven hurries. He got graded by PFF as an 85.1. Okay, his stats didn't show up on there, but he was a bit more disruptive. And you kind of feel that even though he had Joseph in, who'd only been there for a few days, it kind of shows how much Daquan Jones really, really complimented Ed Oliver. Because when Jones was in, he actually had decent games. He had games where he was actually getting hurries, hits, and sacks. Since he's been out, he's not really got that much in the way of pressure and hits and all that. I think up until Jones got injured, he had four hits. He had one, two, three, five sacks. He has what, 14 tackles. As since Jones has been out, he's had one sack, one hit, 11 hurries, and two tackles. So, I mean, it shows that Jones is probably the one there to carry him, but you then got you're then seeing that he's actually now starting to become a bit disruptive. He just needs to just transfer that pressure and the hurries into actual stats.
Yeah.
But I mean, you had
Torrance on offense. So he's been played pretty well. I think the last couple of games, maybe the sort of rookie wall a little bit. They seem to be getting in with a few kind of stunts and stuff. But I think overall, I think he's had a very impressive rookie year. And like you're saying, him and Spencer Brown doing pretty well. I think, you know, for a rookie, I think he's done really well. How was he?
No sacks. Hits. Okay. He actually gave up five hurries. Okay. But he only got graded a 50.5. I still don't know how they figure out these things.
They just throw darts at the board on PFF today.
It's embarrassing what they do.
He's only ever given up in nine games and played every single snap. He's only ever given up one sack and one hit.
Well, you'd take that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Nine games. It's pretty good, isn't it?
And then defense, you said you had
Aaron Johnson, because they really, I said it because the Bengals really picked on him in the divisional round and he did pretty well. I think he was like third in the tackle list, wasn't he? Taron. Yeah, five solo tackles and one tackle for loss.
Let's have a look.
So just behind Tyrell Dodson, which was good, and the leader was Jordan Poyer, which is always bad when a safety is leading the tackles, because that normally means the last man. Yeah, something's going wrong. You want your linebackers and maybe your aggressive corners.
What linebackers do we have left?
And again, you don't want to blame injuries, because again, look, we held the Bengals to 3 points in the second half.
You can't
blame the lads for that, given how many people have been off, and even Rousseau and various people are playing hurt. You can tell, can't they? But
you can't tell me that we wouldn't be a better team if Sean McDermott was running our defense, because with the injuries he's got, what he's managed to get that defense doing is remarkable.
Yes,
but if we had an offensive-minded head coach or someone that knew what the hell they were doing as an offensive coordinator, we wouldn't be a better team with the weapons we've got.
Let's put it this way. Where is it? They're doing defensive splits. There's some guy on Twitter, defensive splits with and without Matt Milano. with Milano, they had it was the defensive splits were 40.5% passing success rate, which was fifth best in the league, and a minus 19 EPA play allowed, which is tied second. Without Milano, they're at 49.3 passing success rate allowed, which is 31st in the league.
It's mad,
and a 0.03 EPA play allowed, which is 28th.
Mental.
And yet we still keep, we still in certain games have kept the teams in. So
well,
it is a testament to what Bean and McDermott have done, where they've actually gone for depth. And obviously the last few draft classes, they've tried to go more defensive. Maybe now it's time for them to switch it up and start being a bit more offensive. And hopefully if Dorsey and when Dorsey goes, they get an offensive coach and say, look, what type of player do you need? They go out either in the draft or in free agency, go out and get that player to fit that scheme. Just we see that the players they bring in are more scheme fits rather than big names, apart from Von Miller.
I think we're going to have a lot of holes though. And like we went offense with our first pick of the last draft. And that's worked out, but with all those players potentially, like, who knows, out of our entire secondary might need almost rebuilding in the next draft. We probably need a linebacker. We probably need a defensive tackle. We probably need an edge rusher. We need a wide receiver. We've got so many holes. The defense is playing incredibly well, but I still think there's a huge amount of holes in it, like bearing in mind the players who are aging and maybe moved on. I think it's very simplistic to say, oh, we'll just go and get a wide receiver in the next draft, because yeah, we probably need to, but there's a huge amount of other holes, like safety is going to need addressing really, really quickly.
Yeah.
Then wide receiver to replace Davis, I think D-line to replace whoever might leave. And then let's see, you've still got Taylor Rapp, you've still got DeMar Hamlin. I think safety would have a drop-off for sure without Hyde and Poyer. But if you can get one more year out of either, and then you've got a two-year build of with another corner, with another safety, or linebacker safety, something like that, or linebacker corner, D-line, wide receiver as your premium picks in the next two drafts, you can maybe fudge it. If the offensive line.
It depends what version of Trey White we're getting back, and it depends what version of Matt Milano we're getting back, and Daquan Jones we're getting back.
I think whatever happens with Trey White, he's gone after 2024. I think if you get something out of him in the 2024 season, brilliant, but I think he's gone after 2024 because it's just not there. I think maybe you trade Knox. And you maybe get somebody back in, you maybe get a safety back, or you maybe get a linebacker back or something like that. Bean does a bit of magic there. When you said actually Mitch Morse, that was the thing that really made me set up, because Dawkins and Morse are
Dawkins is going to be paying soon, and Morse I think will retire before too long.
Surely,
the man of many concussions. He's not going to have too long left, and I'm kind of amazed that he's still upright now.
Yeah, all credit.
But he's going to get to a point where he goes, Dad, you know what? I'd rather be able to like remember my name when I'm 60. Cheers.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. It's I think there's a huge amount to do, and like you, it comes back to my question of, do they think McDermott is the man to get there? He's had opportunities.
Is it the person whose name I keep coming back to is Alan Kirbishley. Alan Kirbishley was manager of Charlton, got him to sixth, seventh in the league. And I remember there was a lot of talk when they got there for the third, fourth year in a row. It is, oh, Charlton gets a 45, 48 points and they get to six, and then they phone it in for the last five games. Oh, has Kirbishley taken them as far as he can go? Where are Charlton now? They don't know how bloody good they had it. Obviously as manager, and so many people like going, oh, Kirbishley can't get us any higher than six. Well, you bloody kill for six now, wouldn't you? I think be careful what you wish for, Do you want to go back to Rex Ryan? Do you want to go back to Chan Gailey? Do you want to go back to Dick Jaron? Because you could.
No, I don't. But I just think. But I can't get past this feeling. Sure. I can't get past this feeling that McDermott is just our version of someone like a Marv Lewis. He's a good head coach. He's, you know, someone that will.
He's a better defensive coordinator than head coach, but he's a serviceable head coach.
He's good. He will install a good culture. Everybody likes him. He gets the team going in the right direction. But is he the guy that can get you a Super Bowl ring?
That's what it comes down to.
I don't know.
And is he a guy that will actually help devise a win against the Broncos on a nice Monday night in Buffalo.
You got us back on the schedule, mate.
That was a brilliant segue.
Genius. Smooth. That's why this is your show.
As a cod liver oil salesman.
that just came off the top of my head, that did.
Yeah.
But no, obviously...
Speaking of crazy rides, what about those Broncos?
True. There's no OJ in this one. Wait, have they got anyone that's got OJ in the name? No. Okay, that's all right. So there's no OJ driving the Bronco. There is a Sean Payton and a Russell Wilson in the driver and passenger seat.
Yeah.
What were we thinking on that game? I mean, we've seen two different sides of the Broncos this year. We saw them get hammered against the Dolphins, but yet we saw them play an all-round good game against the Chiefs and beat the Chiefs. Yeah, what are we going to see from this Broncos team?
Well, they're coming off a bye as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they're Monday night, so you got to think they're going to be fresh. Well, it could be a 13-10. If their defense holds up, it could make it very difficult for us. It could be a bit of a punter-palooza.
Honestly, I think this is a real potential banana skin. We're not playing that well at the moment. The Broncos have, like you said, have won their last two games, including the Chiefs. They only conceded 19 points to the Chiefs in the game that they lost. You look at their record isn't great, but if you look at some of the games that they've played, yes, you've got to take out the anomaly that was the Dolphins game where they conceded 70. They were just appalling and capitulated and like were absolutely terrible. But before that, they only lost by 2 points to the Commanders. Then he lost by a single point to the Raiders in week one when they were still finding their feet under the new head coach. I feel like now they've turned the corner a little bit. Russell Wilson is playing better than he was earlier on in the season. They're getting Jerry Jeudy far more involved in the passing game, whereas earlier on in the season it was all Cortland Sutton. Jerry Jeudy is playing better. I feel like rushing, if they can keep Javonte Williams healthy, he's a great back and they've got a good 1-2 punch with him and McLaughlin. Honestly, I'm not confident. I'm genuinely not. I look at this like, oh, we're playing the Broncos, and you think, well, that's an easy win at home.
Mm.
I just don't think it is. I think there are so many areas where the matchup isn't great for us. Their main strength is rushing, and that's probably our biggest weakness. Their defense is playing really well, and offensively we're playing awfully at the moment, and they've got a passing game that's improving, and we've got injuries all over the place on defense. Honestly, we could very easily lose this game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting one for sure. I mean, obviously you've got Patrick Surtain, who's more than likely going to actually try and shut down Diggs best possible, and this is where Dorsey needs to be creative or Allen needs to be a bit more than a 1-2 read guy and actually go through his third, fourth, fifth reads on there, because obviously Surtain's that, but you've also got Jaquan McMillan, the other cornerback, who actually grades out better than Surtain at the moment.
Yeah.
And then he's not obviously not not go and behold that you've got a couple of, you've got a strong defensive line. You've got Zach Allen, Byron Browning, Jonathan Cooper, Nick Bonito, who between them have got 16 sacks. Okay, this offensive line of ours is actually has not allowed Josh to get hit that much, but it's still a dangerous defense, as you say. They're starting to get better and better as we go along, and it is going to be a real tough game, really. And what was it? It's just got to be how Dorsey can adapt and how well our defense, if we're missing Bernard, who's in concussion protocol at the moment, hoping AJ Klein's back. If not, you're running
it comes to something, doesn't it, when we're relying on AJ Klein.
That is a pretty pass we have found ourselves, isn't it?
God knows who are going to be our starting corners. Is Benford fit? Is Dane Jackson fit? Who knows?
Well, I mean, to give him credit, Joseph and Douglas, when they came in, actually did well. Douglas did quite all right, and I think he'll be pushing probably Jackson for that number two spot if and when Benford's actually healthy on there. So, I mean, there are question marks on defense about who plays where, how many players are we going to have signing up, and obviously Josh, we're going to play Josh Norman quite a bit. Probably it's going to be probably a Josh Norman, Douglas cornerback duo.
it says something, doesn't it?
Christ, but currently Micah Hyde and Christian Benford are both questionable as of right now.
So then you have.
He's gotten questionable with an arm.
Okay. Yeah, he got a stinger, didn't he? He had a stinger in the game. That's why he didn't come back. But
and the more concerning one is Benford, who's questionable with a hamstring, and that's not an injury you can rush back from.
No,
for a corner as well. That's
if we are if we're Razul Douglas and Josh Norman as our starting corners.
With Taylor Rapp and Jordan Poyer as the safeties.
Shitting hell. Who even knows that?
You're gonna be bringing in Saram Neal at corner. You're gonna have you're gonna be really down.
Ingram if they call him up, Cam Lewis.
Cam Lewis, but you're gonna be playing guys out of position, aren't you? He's just gonna just get someone on the field.
I think what we've seen
bring your cleats along, Matt, you might get a go.
Oh man, I need to lose a bit of weight before I can play defensive back. Give me a trenches, I'll be fine. But
I always thought like obviously I have no chance, I have no muscle or backbone or anything. But I always thought if the one position I play at NFL would probably be corner as well. So it's probably too late for me now. But
mine would be a kicker probably.
Kicker, pretty good.
Yeah, or long snapper.
Nothing wrong with long snappers.
No,
so it seems like easy money.
But I think this game is going to be close. I mean, it just depends on how well we can actually adapt, and obviously how well this second, third string, secondary and linebacker core actually do. And to give them credit, the fact that most of the games we've lost this year, they haven't been that bad, have they? Lost what in result wise?
Yeah, each of them we've only lost by one score. Now that in two or three of them they flattered us, but
so
it's not that we had a 42-17 or whatever to the Colts a couple of years ago. We haven't had a result like that in a few years.
But then we did lose to the Patriots, who had conceded points different in the
division
before that was like 70-5. And then came in against us and looked incredible.
Yeah.
But
I think that's the way. I think it's get creative and obviously go more.
Just drawing up plays in the dirt and just backyard footballing it. I think the offense has to win it.
Some schoolyard.
This week the guys will be like, yeah, thanks defensive guys. We just have to figure out. We just have to go and win and just.
As Adam Sandler, as Paul Crew said on The Longest Yard, That's right, playground bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's it. Maybe you just go back and, you know, go back to basics and stop overcomplicating it. Just pick a system, pick a personnel formation that works, and
just make a system that works based on the talent that you've got. Utilize Josh. There's a reason that he can do some of the stuff he can do. Like, use it.
Yeah.
One personnel, up tempo, no huddle, offense.
Will do.
That is the Bills offense. That is the identity of the Bills offense.
That's football, gentlemen. That's all it is.
Yeah.
But so let's go players to watch and prediction. Who wants to go first?
So the two players I had offensive. Yeah, I mean, we've been through a few at this point.
As long as we pick them last week, we can go back for ourselves.
Jay Davis will probably get 5 catches because he's probably due another 5 or 6, and I'll be convinced that he's good now. And then because that's just what happens, he does a six catch 90 yarder game, and then he did nothing. And he did nothing last week, so it'd be nice if he picked up a few catches and, you know, justified it. And my defensive guy, Von Miller. I hope he's all right. I hope he's just feeling his way back into it, and he's 34 and he doesn't want to rush it and he doesn't want to tear anything again. But oh god, he looks old and slow, and he just
I just
want to see a bit more. If you could just get a bit more, then a bit more next week, and a bit more next week, and in the run in, maybe you can get us something. So those are my two.
Okay. Mark.
For my offensive player, can I say Josh Allen?
You can say Josh Allen.
I think at this stage of the game, yeah.
So I feel like he needs a performance. He needs a Josh game. He needs to manage to try and go through a game without throwing an interception. Would be a great start. I think he needs to do a much better job at finding his receivers that are open. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him more aggressively running the ball with a few more design runs would be good. Much like we did against the Buccaneers, right out the bat. Do that and make them have to respect it rather than it just not do it at all. I feel like we need a performance from Josh, so I'm going with him.
Okay, defense.
Oh god, let's go Razzle Douglas. Why not?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's someone who needs to, you know, new team, big shoes to fill, needs to have a game against a team that is improving its passing attack. He'll likely be on Jerry Jeudy. Who has started to perform in the last couple of weeks. Let's see.
Okay. I had a choice of two. Luckily, both of you didn't say the two that I wanted to say for offense. I'm just trying to figure out which one really I want to talk about. The two actually would be Kincaid and Shakir. But I'm going to go with Shakir. Just because of what he's actually done lately, and the fact that he's actually started to become a bit more of a block in a building block and a piece in this offense. He seems to have we started at the beginning of the season to say, okay, he's about fifth or sixth wide receiver behind Davis, behind Kincaid, behind Harty and Sherfield and Diggs and Davis, and yet now there's talk of him potentially being, in wide receiver terms, wide receiver number 3, and possibly even the third read of Josh Allen and the third option for Josh Allen in this offense. And the fact
we've not seen it from Sherfield and Harty, have we? I mean, they've become like the Isaiah McKenzies and the Duke Johnsons and the, you know.
And the fact that he can separate, and the fact that he's pretty much catch everything that's been thrown to
drop,
him.
Doesn't drop anything, does he? No, that's
nice.
No.
It doesn't have any Gabe Davises about him.
He's going to be a guy that's actually going to need that I can see even breaking 100 yards game. I'm actually putting that out there. I think.
Are you putting your nuts on the block that he? Are you guaranteeing 100 yard?
I'm not. I'm putting out hot take on there that he's going to. He's going to be between 90 and 110 yards. Okay. Receiving.
Go on.
You heard it here first.
Just call. Just say the 100 yards. Don't worry about it.
Fine. He's going to be 100. He's going to be over 100 yards.
Fine.
He's going to get a touchdown. It's going to be 100 yards. Just because I think that Allen's now starting to trust him quite a bit on that one. Right. And
you'll get a Khalil Shakir tattoo if he doesn't get it, right?
We'll see. My defensive player is AJ Epenesa.
Okay.
I think you've got Von Miller still coming back. You've got obviously Greg Rousseau. You've got Leonard Floyd on there. AJ's had a very steady season. He's been showing up on the stat sheets and all that. And you can see that he's in a contract year and he just wants to ball out. And I can really see him actually getting involved and actually getting a few more stats on the sheet in this game alone. So he's my defensive player to watch.
Well, any kind of pass rush would be good, really, in this game, because it really does seem to have petered out, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and the one other thing I want to put on before we get just the game prediction. Obviously, we're talking about Kincaid. I should have mentioned this earlier. What do you think his updated game stats for the whole 17 game season? It'll potentially be 85 catches, 720 yards. 88.9% catch rate, 0 drops, 34 first downs, 15 missed tackles, and he's only 29 receptions away from breaking the all-time tight end record for the Bills.
Is that tight end record or tight end rookie record?
What did Ryan put on there? He needs 29 receptions to set the team's all-time record for most receptions by a tight end in the season.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, right. So not rookie season.
No.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, and Pete Metzler finished with 68 receptions in 1993.
That's very decent. Yeah, and that's a good target for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's on about 40 already, isn't he?
He should do that comfortably.
Yeah, he's on 40 at the moment, about halfway through the season. So
yeah, should do that fairly comfortably.
Get a 68. Yeah, that is good.
Yeah. So let's have you can put a score predict. You can put a score on it if you want, but let's get the game prediction.
I mean, I always have to predict the Bills to win. I don't think I could never predict the Bills to lose. I think they scrape it. 23-16.
I was literally going to say 24-17.
Yeah, you still can. I'm thinking a couple more field goals.
Can I go 25-18?
Yeah,
we go 25-18. I will go up and up as we go along. But no, it's going to be another late night, for us Bills fans here in the UK. Obviously, hopefully, waking up and coming into the next day as a 6-4 team rather than a 5-5 team. And all that's left to say is obviously follow Robin, Mark, and myself on the socials. Follow UK Bills and the podcast and all the socials. And from the three of us, it's good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening. And let's go Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, not us. You don't know anything about heart. You know anything about work? No. Huh? That's who we are.
Does on three. 1, 2, 3.